From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben, you are you, and that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. We are joined by our super producer, Alex Williams, in the on the ones and twos today in the booth.
Are there more than one?
We've expanded.
Ones and twos and threes by my count.
That's fair.
Oh, you meant more than one.
Whatever.
Is that stereo channels?
It's true. There you go. That's the ones and the twos, mm-hmm. Except our MP3s are mono. But we're working on changing that.
Yeah, we're working on all sorts of things today. And if we don't take an ill-fated trip, all of those things will come true. Just a bit of a bureaucratic notation here before we begin today's episode. You're going to see some big changes coming up with the stuff they don't want you to know.
Should we give him the full scoop?
I don't know.
Two inside baseball?
Or should we do like a dip and dot kind of thing?
We could just say we've been hashtag blessed with some funding from on high, which could mean more shows, expansions, and things
there's
of
a
that
tech,
nature.
Yeah, there's a TechCrunch article you can find if you wish to learn all about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we are, you know, we have our parent company, How Stuff Works. We are now officially our own thing with How Stuff Works. So now if Matt, Noel, and I say, this goes all the way to the top, we're talking about the guy who works next to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In our previous episode, the episode we previously recorded, we mentioned, some maritime adventures, right? And Noel, you and I have not been on cruises. However, our compatriot has.
Yes. Do we want to rehash the cruises again, boys?
You don't have to. You didn't hate it, right?
I didn't hate it.
Mm-hmm. And,
it was a thing.
It was a thing that happened. Yes. And it was a Caribbean cruise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which brought you perhaps to something that many people have heard of, the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes, I was near it, but not in it.
And yet here you sit.
Right? Mm-hmm. I made it through you guys, reporting back. It was a little weird, but it was cool.
And that is the, as you know, that is the alleged site of numerous plane crashes, boat sinkings, and
disappearances.
Yeah.
Du jour.
Magnetic anomalies.
Yeah. But today we're going to examine the alleged Eastern version of this, the so-called Devil's Triangle. According to legends, there have been tens of thousands of people who've tried to cross this stretch of ocean only to perish or disappear in the attempt. In the modern era, so goes the story, several Japanese research and military vessels have also gone missing in this triangle, leading to a number of dead and disappeared, estimated to be over 700 people. Pretty,
wow.
Pretty hefty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to those claims in a bit. First, let's look at the facts. What are we talking about when we say Devil's Triangle?
Well, it's not only known as the Devil's Triangle, it's also called the Devil's Sea,
ooh,
the Dragon's Triangle, and the Taiwan Triangle. And just as with the Bermuda Triangle, ooh, it's even sometimes called the Devil's Triangle.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, so it gets weird when we ask each other, you know, well, where is this? What was Devil's Sea, Dragon's Triangle, Taiwan Triangle? Because there's no official world map that plots this.
Yeah, it's written all over the place online where it's supposed to run from, you know, it's a triangle. So it, in theory, it should have some pretty defined areas in which it, you know, is affecting the world around it.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's said to run from Taiwan up to the volcanic island of Miyake-jima, that's just south of Tokyo, and then to about Iwo Jima or somewhere in that vicinity, pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Both of those locations are along something called the Izu Bonin Volcanic Arc, That's a line of underwater volcanoes and islands that stretch – well, they're part of a larger system that stretches 2,500 kilometers all the way from Japan to Guam. And some people, like the author Charles Berlitz, say that the Devil's Sea, which I think is my favorite name so far. What do you think?
I think the Devil's Sea is cool. I like ascribing a shape to it, implying that it's sort of a zone.
Okay.
You know, the sea. Yeah. It's pretty, is it like the whole sea?
Right. Yeah.
It's a sea that exists in itself apart from the ocean.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's a good point. We do need to have parameters. Well, according to this author, Charles Berlitz, the Devil's Triangle is every bit as dangerous and mysterious as the Bermuda Triangle. And we can imagine right now how the people who are very dismissive of the Bermuda Triangle might find this hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody is actually in their car right now going, that is true. Oh, me. Oh, my.
For sure. But then there are other people in the audiences who, as soon as they hear Devil's Triangle, they think of the vile vortices, which is something that has been traded around amongst the mysteriously minded for quite a while.
Vile vortices. Okay, what's a vile vortice? Oh, wait, that's the plural.
Mm-hmm.
What are vile vortices, Matt?
Well, a vile vortex is a concept, really. It's the idea that there's perhaps something strange going on with either the Earth's electromagnetic system. It's the way it functions. Maybe it's a little stronger in this place than anywhere else. And odd things tend to happen with metal objects and living beings.
Okay. All right. So the idea then is that these are distributed across the planet?
Yes, precisely. There is a map of sorts that you can find, and it shows you where there's one at the North Pole and there's one at the South Pole, and then the rest of them are kind of polka-dotted in a pattern, albeit across the Earth.
And we can trace this idea specifically to the author Ivan T. Sanderson, and he is at the source of a lot of these claims. When he first proposed this concept, other authors took it up and they attributed different causes as the source of the alleged disruption, right? So,
mm-hmm.
like you said, Matt, electromagnetic stuff, gateway to hell, paranormal things.
Portal to another dimension, maybe?
Extra dimensional portals. We have a rundown of the vortices that you mentioned, Matt, that are distributed across the planet. Ladies and gentlemen, would you like to know where they are?
Okay. Let's start at the North and South Pole, if that's okay, just because that's kind of obvious. If you're talking
sure.
about electromagnetic strangeness, you're going to have perhaps some things going on at the North and South Pole. Then you move on to the Bermuda Triangle. That's the, you know, the granddaddy of these vortices. Mm-hmm. then you got the Algerian megaliths. This is just south of Timbuktu, and there you can find this stuff online if you want to learn more about these other specific vortices. Mm. And perhaps, you know, we can pick some of these up later. The Indus Valley over in Pakistan. There's a volcano just east of Hawaii. That's a pretty interesting place.
Hamakulia.
Mm-hmm. We got the Devil Sea. The one we're talking about today, the triangle, whatever you want to call it. There's I'm going to save this one for last.
Okay.
The Wharton Basin, and you can find a link to that on Wikipedia and check that out. The Easter Island Megalith, the statues. Just east of Rio de Janeiro, there's a section or an area over there that's said to be part of this. The Loyalty Islands, which are, I believe, between just north of the intersection, or I guess the area between New Zealand and Australia.
Okay.
Then my favorite one by far, the South Atlantic Anomaly, which perhaps is a whole separate episode on its own. It's this place where the Van Allen belts dip a little bit closer to Earth than the rest of the belts. So you have this radiation at X miles above the Earth that's much higher than it should be and is in any other part of the Earth.
And can interfere with high altitude orbital craft as well as spacecraft, right?
Yeah, even astronauts have reported, specifically those above on the space shuttle when it would orbit, that they would get the shooting stars in their eyes when they would go near that area. So then later on down the road, they had to improve the radiation shielding for any other vessels, specifically the International Space Station.
For folks that don't know, the Van Allen belts are like, it's like a charged area in the atmosphere. Isn't that right?
Yeah, these are the major reason that people, one of the major reasons that people believe we never went to the moon, because you couldn't get through that in theory.
Right, right. Yeah. And these, they fluctuate, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this specific area has a higher rate. So Van Allen belts can wax and wane, depending on solar energy. And sometimes they can damage satellites. And I think you are correct. We do have a South Atlantic anomaly episode in our future. Mm-hmm. Today, most oceanographers or naval experts and scholars and related disciplines are going to dismiss the vast majority of claims made by Ivan Sanderson and his supporters. And they're going to say, that's malarkey, don't believe it, vile vortices or a whole other realm of the made up. And, you know, we see similar things happen with theories about ley lines or something, where they say people are just drawing lines at random and ascribing meaning to them. But what exactly is supposed to be going on here?
So in his book, which was published in 1989, called The Dragon's Triangle, this author Berlitz said that Japan lost 5 military vessels in the area that we're talking about between 1952 and 1954. And that accounts for a loss of somewhere in the neighborhood of 700 sailors. Another author by the name of Dan Cohen wrote a book in 1974 called Curses, Hexes, and Spells, in which he reported that legends of the danger of the Devil's Sea, Devil's Triangle, what have you, are centuries old as far as Japanese lore goes. So its most famous modern casualty was the number 5 Kaio Maru, which was a scientific research vessel that disappeared with the loss of everyone on board on September 24th, 1953. And that's a date that's wrongly reported often, Ben?
Yeah. Sometimes 1952, 1958, but the actual date is 1953. And by any single person's measurement, it is an enormous tragedy to lose people at sea. But let's look at some of these other claims. There's stories and allegations. That's number 5, Kaio Maru. That's the most well-known modern one. According to other proponents of the idea, as Noel mentioned just a second ago, the story dates back for centuries. So you'll hear tales of fleets from China and Kublai Khan going missing in the area. The specific legend that we're digging around in is one that says in the 1200s, Kublai Khan tried several times to invade Japan by crossing the Devil's Triangle. In this process, according to his story, he lost his vessels and he lost 40,000 men in the area. 40,000.
That's a lot, especially at the time.
Yes, it is. And we mentioned, you know, we mentioned that they've wrongly reported the date of that modern tragedy is 1952 or 1958, which lets us know that things slip a little. With the Kaio Maru, oftentimes the authors who say that this is an example of somebody being lost in Japan's Bermuda Triangle, they often make increasingly unsubstantiated claims, and they say that everything from a visiting UFO to some sort of lost style electromagnetic fluke.
Dude,
are responsible.
Spoilers.
I didn't say what happened in it. I knew you were going to say that. I didn't. Oh man. There's an entire wiki dedicated to Lost.
That's true.
I'm not standing down on that one. The other examples that we hear cited are often going to be portrayed as military vessels or large commercial vessels disappearing in calm weather with no clear explanation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing where it gets weird for me is like, you know, you've got these giant vessels where there's meticulous bookkeeping. They know exactly who's on board, what's on board, and there is, you know, protocol of keeping in touch with home base. That's the stuff that really makes me kind of like think, huh, is this a thing? You know?
Yeah. I absolutely agree. That's the ocean is vast and deep, right? But we also have technology, even in the 50s, that would allow people to be in, if not continual, incredibly frequent communication with someone else. You know what I mean? Radio existed.
You know, there's one thing, one of the pieces of research that we looked at in this, I think we should just mention at this point, was Skeptoid, mm-hmm. who did an episode on this and mentions that a lot of the times the large military vessels from way back in the day that were reported being missing were actually fishing vessels. Just pointing that out.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that. We'll see that coming up again, later on in the show. For now, I think we've painted some of the lore and some of the legends and the claims here. Let's take a look at the evidence.
Evidence?
After a word from our sponsor.
Unfortunately, evidence of this Devil's Triangle or sea in action is extremely hard to come by.
Right. Sure. Of course, there are historical records of fishing boats going missing, sinking, or wrecking throughout regional history, throughout global history, from the ancient past to the modern day. However, in this instance, there are no cases of scholars at the time citing a Dragon's Triangle or attributing widespread paranormal causes to these tragedies. It was enough for most of human history to just acknowledge that, you know, the ocean is a very dangerous and deadly place, and people are not built for it. To be fair, there were also numerous spiritual explanations for the tragedy, but I think we can agree that's a very different thing. Maybe it's more of a belief system, maybe even in some level a coping mechanism, but we would be remiss if we did not talk about the Kublai Khan adventure, because first things first, there really was an attempted invasion of Japan by the Mongol forces in the 1200s. Not only was there one, there was more than one. I guess anything that isn't one is more than one.
Correct.
Unless it's zero. Somebody save me here.
Right. So in 1274, the Yuan fleet set out with an estimated 15,000 Mongol and Chinese soldiers and 8,000 Korean soldiers in 300 large vessels. And they also had 400 to 500 smaller craft. Although figures vary widely, as they often do with these things, depending on the source.
Man, that is a massive fleet.
It's a pretty mega fleet. So they initially made significant progress into the area. But then, around nightfall, a typhoon caused the Mongol ship captains to suggest that the land force re-embark in order to avoid the risk of being, shipwrecked, marooned on Japanese soil, which would be bad times.
Right. So they were saying, okay, the weather is clearly souring, so we need to hop on the boats here and get back before we are stuck. And who knows what would have happened, you know, maybe other supporting Japanese forces could have come to the area.
Can we just set the scene here, Ben, just a little bit, or if you would maybe help, what's at stake here? What is the kind of like the surrounding reason for this event?
Well, if we're painting with broad brush strokes, the typical line would be that the Mongol Empire depended upon expansion. So sort of like unrestricted capitalism, it couldn't exist without things to consume. You know what I mean? And also the Mongol forces at the time were not well-known seafaring fighters. They were, you know, they didn't have an awesome navy. They were much more well-known for their ability to wage war on horses, for their specialized bows, which were some real fascinating stuff. We're talking about explosives. We're talking about rockets. But
Can I just pause the conversation here for 1 second, everybody? Take one step back. As we're recording this, we're in the aftermath of Harvey here in the United States. And then Hurricane Irma is on its way, possibly, to striking Florida. Definitely going to hit the Caribbean islands.
Heard it's even coming through Atlanta.
Yeah. Imagine in the 1200s, you were experts at the sea if you're, you know, the captain of a naval ship back then, especially in a military capacity. Still, you don't have Doppler radar from across, you know, the other side of the ocean to see as a typhoon is forming and, like, to really get an understanding of where it's headed or what's going on. That's an intense situation because, you know, it has to be pretty close just to even see it.
You know, I completely agree. I also would be quick not to underestimate the knowledge these folks have because they're probably reading the migratory patterns of birds. Mm-hmm. They're probably noticing little things that would pass most of us completely by, you know. But
that's
it's
a great
still,
point.
But still, it's not. But still, you make a great point. It's not comparable to having Doppler radar or something. By daybreak, almost all the ships had set out to sail back to mainland China, and those that had. This is where the Devil's Dragon's Triangle stuff comes in, because those that had were destroyed by the storm. We're talking about around 200 Mongol ships lost at sea. The small Japanese boats were much more maneuverable than the Mongol ships, and so the remaining ships were on the Mongol side were boarded by the Japanese and crippled. Took over a very ungood double plus bad day for everybody, or double unplus. I'm not caught up on my 1984. The Mongols would attempt another invasion just a few years later in 1281. So that is, as we can see, that is like the root of the cryptic references you'll hear in these Vile Vortices or Dragon's Triangle books about the great Khan's hordes were lost in mm-hmm. the Devil's Sea.
Well, and as intense and horrifying as being caught in a typhoon, I'm assuming is, I have never experienced it, but I'm assuming it's intense, especially then, it would have been considered not such a strange thing, right? I mean, people are aware of weather patterns and the force of nature at that time, and you attribute it to, you know, whatever you attribute it to, but generally it's kind of mundane.
Well, is there maybe a sense that, like, the Bermuda Triangle and some of these areas of, you know, disturbance, shall we say, are maybe more prone to extreme weather conditions? And that's sort of what gives them this reputation. Because there's just, you know, that far out to sea, you're going to get bigger storms than you are closer to the mainland. I don't know.
That's a great question. One of the things that we run into a lot here in the modern day is that authors and critics, opponents and proponents of different ideas will accuse each other of misleading the audience. So Charles Berlitz gets accused of sort of editorializing this thing, this instance of a failed invasion, and taking a, as Matt said, completely explicable sort of series of events and reframing it as something in a poorly written reality TV show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the thing about reality television, that just to go a little bit off air here, I was never the biggest fan, but I had no idea how much of that stuff is scripted and carefully, they call it produced.
Which is funny though, because the like industry term for that stuff is unscripted.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
And funny, I think misnomer.
Yeah. I think off air, the three of us at least have all run into what that looks like a little bit behind the curtain, you know, and I guarantee you, if you watch reality television, wish you the best, and I hope you have a good time with it. But do be aware that I'm sure most people know that every time the camera is not directly on somebody who is making a big deal out of an incredibly insignificant problem, there is a producer or an assistant producer who's sort of grooming them and coaxing them, and in some cases trying to get them drunk.
And this is sort of like that, only the individuals being described didn't really have a say in it at all. It's just kind of one guy sort of painting with a broad brush, I guess, and deciding what the narrative actually is. And I mean, we see that all the time with history. I mean, they say history is written by the victors, and this is a little bit different than that. But
I will never forget the end of the Ozzy Osbourne reality TV show where they show you the behind the scenes of the scripted parts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I never
saw it. Did it ruin it for you?
It blew my mind. Blew my mind.
Do tell.
Ozzy Osbourne can read? Still?
That's a low blow.
I mean, I said still. Yeah,
it was a long time ago when you imagine. That was, I guess, high school for me. I can't even remember exactly when it was, but
you know,
holy mackerel.
I don't remember where this came from, and I will try to find it and put it on our social media. I read somewhere that there was a study being conducted, a genetic study being conducted on Ozzy Osbourne. I don't know if this was a hoax, because they were trying to figure out how he could have done so many drugs and still, you know, not had a debilitating disease and still be relatively all there.
I certainly hope they included Keith Richards in that study.
Right. Yeah. He should be in there too. We've got to, well, let's see. Well, let's give the show a little bit and see if we can dig that up as we proceed. but yes, also to be fair to Mr. Berlitz, we have not spoken with him directly.
Mm-hmm.
And to be even fairer. More fair, even fairer, to be even more fair, this typhoon, this historic typhoon, did occur at an abnormal time.
Mm-hmm.
The invasion took place in November, but the typical typhoon season runs from May to October. We've already started talking about some of the problems with this story and this legend. In 1995, an American author named Larry Kush published The Bermuda Triangle Mystery Solved.
Whoa.
I know. All along the way, he debunked, or for many people, he debunked Berlitz's claims about the Bermuda Triangle and the Dragon's Triangle. He says that the military vessels that were mentioned, that as we alluded to earlier, were actually just fishing vessels.
Now, why does that matter?
Well, it matters because fishing vessels are easily lost.
And they're extremely common, right? Mm-hmm. And they're probably a little bit smaller.
And they're they're going to be, in many cases, they're going to be much, much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And for those to get lost is an unfortunate reality of life at sea. Especially if we're considering also that many of the fishing military vessels have the ability for their story to be known. They probably have better communication systems, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Might not be the case with a lot of smaller fishing vessels, you know, anywhere from mom and pop operations to like local businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Or local regional businesses.
But there's more.
Yes, yes. As Billy Mays was wont to say, there is indeed more. Some of those crashes listed by Charles Berlitz sank outside the area that's defined as the Dragon's Triangle.
Now, is that a problem with where they sank or, you know, the boundaries of the Dragon's Triangle? Maybe it's bigger than we think.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is. Kush also wrote that the Japanese vessel carried not 100 personnel, as Berlitz claimed, but only 31, and that an undersea volcano is what destroyed it.
Hmm. Now that's peculiar in its own right, in my mind.
Yeah, undersea volcanoes sound weird. And then, okay, another problem with this idea. If the legend really does go back for centuries and centuries, then why isn't there more, scratch that, any information about it in the historical record from any of the countries lining the place where this triangle is supposed to exist?
And then enters the Skeptoid's Brian Dunning. He did, or supposedly did, a large search for any type of newspaper, magazine articles, books, really anything written down specifically about the Dragon's Sea Triangle, Devil's Triangle, all that stuff. And he came up empty-handed. Until 20 years after the loss of the Kayumaru, apparently the story then just became. It was breathed into existence.
So, yeah, apparently this legend of things going back for centuries was a fairly recent invention.
At least according to Brian Dunning and the research he conducted.
The first written records of the triangle only show up in the 1970s, and then when they blew up in the fringe scene, the literature became flooded with accounts of this new mysterious region, with tales that had been feared for centuries. Nearly all published references, again, Dunning cites this as well as a couple of others, nearly all published references are from the early 70s, and they're immediately upon the heels of Ivan Sanderson's articles from 1971, 1972.
And all of that stuff led Dunning to conclude that, quote, in short, there is no Devil's Sea, and there never was, outside the imagination of Ivan Sanderson and the authors who wrote about his vile vortices.
But it sounds so great. Vile vortices.
They're just really, like, disgusting vortices.
Yes. Yeah, they don't tip. Yeah. They squeeze toothpaste from the middle. They pick their noses.
Forgot to shower for about a month.
So, personally, I think the phrase vile vortices sounds like a supervillain weapon, like something Cobra Commander would use.
Yeah, or a team. It's like a team of somebody who's really, really dastardly.
It's just it's like a biker gang that got a hold of a thesaurus but didn't read the whole entry.
What is a vortices?
It's like Team Rocket from Pokemon.
So we do hate to look, we all want to believe in these amazing, extraordinary things, and the long and short of it is, in the research that we found in primary historical sources and in common parlance in the area, this is largely considered a myth, and it's not treated with near as much prominence as several other local or regional extraordinary events or beliefs. And this is, in many ways, kind of a Western thing.
Strangely, right?
Yeah, it's a thing that people in the coast of China and in the coast of Japan don't really think about or give near as much credence to.
Definitely feels like a tale of the other.
Yeah, and haven't for certainly haven't been worrying about it for centuries. Most people are, families or friends on the coast just hoping their loved ones make it back before, a storm hits or disaster occurs.
Which are real dangers.
But we're not ending the tale there yet. We do have some explanations, a peek, if you will, behind the curtain, after a word from our sponsors.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. As we promised before the break, we have some possible explanations for some of these bizarre occurrences in the Devil's Sea. Starting off, there's pretty much no way around it, but boats and ships and vessels, what float, they really have disappeared in this area of the Pacific, quite a bit, in fact. That much is true. But what's the deal with the triangle? Or with all of the triangles? Why?
Very Andy Rooney there for a second. I like it.
Which one? What?
What's the deal with...
Is that Andy Rooney? I thought that was Seinfeld.
A bit Seinfeld-y, but Rooney too. Rooney, interesting.
Okay, well. But really? 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 Really?
Yeah, so what's going on?
What's up with the triangle?
Why aren't there more devil's squares or devil's octagons?
Well, obviously, you got to have some angles.
Devil's pentagram, come on.
That's what I'm saying. Devil's not a square. The devil's not a circle.
All right.
The devil's clearly a triangle.
Or a series of triangles.
It's shaped like a goat's head.
Okay.
Literally edgy.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, boy.
too much.
Oh, boy.
That's fine. But yeah, like, that's true. But why? So, there is research that explores some of these environmental changes as the cause of such anomalies as said triangles. Mm-hmm. One of these explanations is that the vast field of methane hydrates that exist at the bottom of the ocean in that area could potentially have something to do with these disturbances that we talked about that originally some people attributed to an electromagnetic, lost kind of situation.
Yeah.
These are downright terrifying to me, the existence of these.
So, yeah, this is very unfair. Nature is brutal and unfair. Uh-huh. This is one example.
Nature doesn't care about you.
No, not at all. There are these deposits of methane hydrates gas, methane clathrates, and when they reach a certain temperature, they will quote-unquote explode. That temperature, just so you know, is not very insane. It's 64 degrees.
Thankfully, they're at, you know, the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are these ice-like deposits that break off from the bottom and they can rise, forming bubbles on the surface of the water. And again, this is just like...
This is the scary part.
This is theoretical. These gas eruptions could interrupt buoyancy. What this means is they could easily sink a ship, leaving no trace of debris.
You would just be sailing along and then...
Like it would suck you down?
Essentially, you would lose buoyancy, so you would just, the ship would just go.
Well, when I picture your Bermuda Triangle, that's kind of what I've always pictured is something like that. So that's pretty wild.
See, in my head, it's a vortex, essentially.
So you're saying it literally just disrupts the ability of your vessel to float?
It would be like a bunch of air bubbles down below your ship. That you're going over and you just kind of – and it's not exactly that.
See, I pictured like the water just opening up in like a hole and then you just fall down.
And then like a distant – right.
Yeah.
I always pictured – you know, I remember so many films or older things like episodes of The Twilight Zone where there would be this gray all-enveloping fog rolling in and then, you know, the captain or the pilot of a plane, for instance, they do the thing where they tap their compass and stuff and the altimeter and everything's going crazy. And next thing you know, it opens up and they're in a weird unknown land. But then they crash.
Or they're like on top of a mountain or something.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, I gotta harp on this. So the water is affected in such a way that it will not support the weight of the ship?
So here's the problem. No one has ever seen an actual eruption like this.
And you wouldn't. No one would be left to tell the tale.
No one knows how large the bubbles coming off the methane deposit would be, but...
In theory. Give it to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, but the scientists who... Well, pump your brakes. We're getting
sorry,
there.
Sorry, man. I'm jazzed about this.
But there are scientists who have conducted research on this, and they found that they made a model of a single large bubble coming up under a ship, and they trapped water between vertical glass plates. They launched gas bubbles from the bottom, right? And they used a video camera to record what happened to this hull they have floating on the surface. If the thing is exactly above the bubble, then it's safe. But if it's far enough away, say if it's where it's toward the edge, that it just sinks in. So it doesn't explode. The bubble sort of swallows it, for lack of a better word, which that's to me crazy. Is more frightening than an explosion.
No, you're helping me out real big with my mental image of this phenomenon, and it's freaking me out.
Is this the best advertisement for a cruise ever?
I don't want to be that far out in the water, man. You know, we just did the Titanic. I mean, you know, like, come on.
We really are scaring people away from, you know, being on the ocean right now.
Well, no reason to stop yet because there's a different explanation, right?
Should we get into great white sharks instead? No?
What's up with sharks?
We can save that for another day.
I'm just saying, like, it's another reason why I don't like to swim in the ocean. But okay, let's keep going.
Oh, okay. Well, another reason that ships could disappear more frequently in this area would be that small islands in this triangle, in the Dragon's Triangle, frequently disappear. New islands frequently appear due to volcanoes and seismic activity. We cannot forget, ladies and gentlemen, about the Ring of Fire.
The Ring of Fire is this huge 25,000-mile horseshoe-shaped area in the basin of the Pacific Ocean down there at the bottom, including in the area that we consider to be the Devil's Sea. It's home to just a ton of earthquakes and volcanic activity down there. It's associated with almost a continuous creation of trenches, oceanic trenches, volcanic arcs, volcanic belts, plate movements, and it has over 450 volcanoes. That's over 75% of the world's active and dormant volcanoes exist in this ring of fire down at the bottom of the ocean.
So, is it possible that a volcanic eruption on the ocean floor could reach a ship?
Well, yeah, you're just talking about the release of gases again, as the, you know, the immense heat that's being generated right below where the water is and then coming up and meeting with that water, creating steam that has to get pushed up. Mm. Again, you're talking about swallowing ships potentially.
I know that, this is kind of ridiculous. 2015, there was an active underwater volcano that was, that came to life off of Grenada. And you guys will really enjoy the name. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
It was called the Kick'em Jenny Volcano.
Wow. Kick'em Jenny?
Yeah. Yeah, like that, like three words.
What
like,
if it's New Zealand? Kick'em.
Kick'em Jimmy.
Right? Jimmy or Jenny?
Oh, Jenny. Right, you're Jenny. Right. Jenny.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Everybody in New Zealand, we apologize. We've been practicing this accent.
I don't think we have any New Zealand listeners left at this point.
You don't think so? Everybody's gone.
No. Write in and let us know. Actually, let us know about Kiwi conspiracies too. We'd love to hear those. So the problem with this is I'm bringing this up because this is a good specific example of the problems here, because not only is a underwater volcano powerful enough, as Matt said, to affect the surface, but it could even shoot hot rocks into the air. These can be massive. In the case of Kick'em Jenny, scientists set up an exclusion zone for ships around the volcano.
Wow.
Recreational ships had to stay 3 miles away from it, and I think commercial ships had to stay a mile or two away.
Yeah.
Just in case. So it is completely possible that some of these ships, maybe even the Maru that we mentioned earlier, number 5, it is possible that these ships were instead the victims of volcanoes.
Wow. That's terrifying and for me. Much more terrifying than a mysterious devil's area.
Yeah.
What about mysterious gas bubbles? That's the one that gives me pause.
Yeah, I feel like a fiery death at sea is more understandable than just all of a sudden saying, oh, we're on the water. Now we're in it. Why can't I breathe?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, though. I mean, like a fiery death at sea, it seems like it would leave behind more flotsam and jetsam and whatnot. Like the whole, you know, kicker of these places usually tends to be gone without a trace, right?
Yeah.
Like
right.
That's sort of like the calling card, I guess, yeah, for lack of a better term.
And then if you do find them, it's, you know, 50 to hundreds of years later at the bottom of the sea. Weird.
And we'd like to know what your experiences are, your maritime experiences, and most importantly, what your take is on these ideas of the Bermuda Triangle, the Dragon's Triangle. Also, you know, I want to ask people, what's your idea about this vile vortices thing in general? Because we would love to hear about a source that comes from before the 1950s, let's say,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Do you live near one?
Right. Could you go check it out or have you had any experiences there? It's how we find out if we have any friends in the Easter Islands.
Mm-hmm.
If so, we may be coming to your house to crash.
We'll be there in 2 weeks.
And is it? Will it take us 2 weeks?
Well, it's just there's a lot of planning that goes into it.
That's probably true, yeah. So unfortunately, yeah, a lot of the stuff about this seems to have sprung up after the fact with little supporting evidence in the preceding literature. However, we do know that there is absolutely nothing fictitious about losing ships at sea. According to a maritime insurer named Allianz, losses at sea continue in the modern day.
Yeah, I mean, this is still clearly happening. We've got stats from 2007 to 2016 indicating that the area comprising South China, Indonesia, and the Philippines counted 249 lost ships, while the area north of that, think Japan, the Korean Peninsula, and the like, counted 133 lost vessels. And these numbers are actually on the decline.
Thankfully.
Yeah, the maritime industry on the whole has seen the total number of losses decrease during 2016 to 85. And then the number of incidents or casualties also is on a year-over-year downturn.
And according to another report from Allianz, one of the big questions would be how many ships disappeared without a trace, right? Overall, from 2000 to 2013, there were only seven that were considered what they call missing / overdue. So you can still be missing for 2 years and be overdue.
Wow. Missing for 2 years at sea. That's not a fate I want to experience.
And so concludes our show. You know what we haven't done in a little while?
Is it a
shout-out corners? Kadoosh.
Our first shout-out goes to Nick. Says, hi, gang. Love your show. In the effervescent episode 300, you mentioned blood donations. I think it was a 99 Pi podcast or maybe Radiolab where I first heard that donated blood is a big business and that hospitals seek out more blood than they need to sell it to other hospitals. It might even have been stuff to blow your mind, come to think of it. Well, you need to get your podcast straight, Nick. Come on. In the process...
Hey, leave Nick alone.
In the process, lots of plasma gets thrown away, apparently. Here are a couple of links that that take us down this rabbit hole. So he sent us some great stuff from WPTV, and then there's a nice little Reddit Today I Learned section here. So we're going to dive into this, Nick, and we'll report back with what we find.
Literal blood money.
What about plasma money? Plasma doesn't have the same ring to it, does it?
It's a wave of the future, though, right? Plasma money. That's where all the money is.
Let's get in early. Our next shout out comes from Nicole. Hi guys, what happened to the video podcast in the iTunes store? I haven't received any new updates in quite some time. Are the podcasts audio only now? Thanks, Nicole. We mentioned at the top of the show, we had some changes in the works in terms of some investment in our company and the podcast business, I guess you could say, spinning off from the How Stuff Works in general. With that has come kind of an emphasis on the podcasts, and that means less video. And,
yeah.
And, you know, Matt.
And beyond the iTunes store or Apple Podcast video store, we have put a pause on our video production for the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know video series, specifically on our YouTube channel and anywhere else that you've been watching our show, maybe on Amazon. And we're just putting a pause on that, like Noel said, to focus on this show, this thing that people who make more money than us and make decisions above us have faith in. So we're going to keep going with it.
But there may be like opportunities down the line to supplement some of the stuff we do here with some video stuff or some one-offs. We'll see. But, you know, a lot of exciting new stuff coming down the pike, but we're not fully aware of all of it yet.
And thanks so much for writing in, Nicole. We have one more shout out for today, but it's a bit of a doozy. So get comfortable in your seat or scoot to the edge of it, you know, wherever you prefer to encounter doozy messages. Hey guys, says Laura B. I just listened to your podcast about America's Zone of Death, and I'm actually a former student of Professor Kalt. I attached a photo of his class syllabus to prove it. I really appreciate you guys giving him credit for this topic because it's been showing up a lot on social media without him being credited at all. That's a real pill. Laura, I find that personally offensive. That was me. Ben, that wasn't Laura. Laura continues, you guys should give Professor Kalt a Google because he has also written on a wide variety of other super interesting little discussed topics, and I'm sure he'd be more than happy to talk with you guys. Keep up the good work, Laura.
Nice.
thank you so much for writing in, Laura. And here's the bonus. Here's the doozy part. Professor K did write back to us. He wrote back to us yesterday, I think. And his email was very, very kind to the point where I was thinking, man, I wish you were my professor. He, we'll just read some brief highlights here. One thing I really liked was, he said, a few points I heard and enjoyed your podcast about my Yellowstone theory. I wanted to reach out, offer my enthusiastic participation with whatever else you want to do with the subject, and also on the pardon power, as you mentioned. A few points that came to mind as I listened. One, you called me Dr. Cult, but like so many law professors, I'm not a PhD. Also, I pronounce cult like halt or salt, not kelt. No worries though. I've been called far worse. I think this guy has a great sense of humor. Two, in case you get any feedback on the Yellowstone theory, a very common response is that the state of Idaho would just prosecute you. And that's true of most national parks. If the feds couldn't prosecute you, the state would be able to step in. But in a few of them, like Yellowstone, the feds have exclusive jurisdictions. So that's a no-go. Three, it's worth mentioning that if you tried to use the loophole, you would still be subject to getting sued, civil liability, and prosecuted for misdemeanors for which you have no right to a jury trial. You also would not be able to use the loophole if you did any part of the crime, like forming your intent or conspiring, outside the zone. Oh man, you know what that means. We're already guilty. Our moonshine operation already went elbows up. Perhaps most importantly, if you're thinking of pulling something, there's probably someone else there with the same idea, and he's bigger than you.
Well, how does he know?
All of this eliminates much of the loophole's usefulness to would-be criminals. I still think the loophole is worth fixing, though. Even with all the reasons why it's limited and why it might not work, there really is no good reason not to fix it and just color inside the lines. On pardons, number one, you mentioned pardons declaring you guilty. I wrote a short piece in an attempt to disabuse people of that notion. And so he has a piece in the Wall Street Journal that he refers us to. Pardons aren't only for the guilty. And two, he said, self-pardoning was the subject of my first legal article in 1996 and a chapter of my book in 2012. If you're ever interested in doing anything on pardons, I'd love to help. And he also recommends a chapter from a book called Constitutional Cliffhangers, A Legal Guide for Presidents and Their Enemies. And it's on the loophole in the 22nd Amendment that could allow a two-term president to stay in power.
Oh, I want to do both of those.
You want to both be president, stay in power?
That specifically, as well as self-pardoning and pardoning in general. I just want to learn more about that, and I think people out there would want to as well.
Yeah, let us know if you'd like to learn more about legal loopholes, and we are going to be following up with our new favorite law professor. And for now, this concludes our... But not our show. Fear not, ladies and gentlemen. We will return next week with something strange, either very new or very ancient and eldritch, but nonetheless fascinating.
In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do the social media thingy. We are Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook and Twitter. If you want to do the Instagram thing, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. And Matt, I think there's another way we always talk about if people don't want to do any of that stuff. What is that?
It's three candles in a triangle. You have to be in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and there's one this area between Taiwan, some volcanic islands. Anyway.
On a raft made of cadavers.
Yep. That's new.
A cadaver raft.
That's new for 2017, but that's definitely in the rules. So, if you don't want to do any of that stuff in the cadaver boat, just really doesn't, you know, strike your fancy, you can just write us an email. We are
conspiracy@housetofworks.com.